Wednesday, November 18, 2015. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and we bring you more of a common sense approach to the world of sports than you get anywhere else. You can download, you can subscribe on iTunes, pretty much anywhere that hosts podcasts, you can find the Daily Dose, or you can just head over to our website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. You can listen to it there. We also post articles every single week, put up a little bit of new content there every single week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday specifically. You can go over there and find some new stuff. If you would like to contact the show, lately we have been getting receiving a few emails. I don't know if it's, you know, the struggles of the Broncos. There's a few different things. A few different things people have had some thoughts on. I'll always respond to your emails. Like, I'll email you back. But if I get something particularly intriguing, then we're probably going to have to bring it on the show and talk about it. If you'd like to email the show, emails, dailydosesports@gmail.com. That is D-A-L-Y, dailydosesports@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you. You know, you got a question? You got a comment? You need some advice? You never know. You never know what you're going to get. If you'd like to follow the show on Twitter, you can follow us at Daily Dose Sports. You can do the same thing for Facebook if you would like to spice up that Facebook feed with a little bit of sports information as well. Today on the show, we got a few things we got to get to. Got a couple things that are of interest that you're going to want to stick around for. We will talk about the winners and losers in college football this week. And you know, those are never quite how people might think they are. Plus, a little bit later in the show, we're actually going to be joined by sports columnist Dylan Brooks. Dylan covers the NFL, does some work with the NBA. He's a very, very smart guy. I would like to get his thoughts on a few things. As usual, we will also have our Daily Dose Top 5, always a very, very popular segment on the show. You want to make sure you stick around for that. We have some things coming out in the world of breaking news. First and foremost, the Houston Rockets have fired head coach Kevin McHale. You know, the Rockets are 4-7 this season. And they are actually on a four-game losing streak that prompted a players-only meeting after their game on Tuesday morning. McHale was in his fifth season with the team. It was in the first year of a three-year extension that they just gave him last December worth more than $12 million. But the Rockets are struggling right now. For his time in Houston, McHale was 193-30. They have gone to the playoffs three straight times. And don't forget, just last year, they were in the Western Conference Finals and they pushed Golden State. Kevin McHale has now been fired. And I have to think, somewhere out there, Dwight Howard is like checking off his list of things to do today. And he's like, let's see, lift weights. Yep. Work on free throws. No. I mean, maybe I'll do that tomorrow. Get coach fired. Yep. Develop a low post move. No, I don't think I need to do that either. Dwight Howard's a coach killer, people. He looks so good. He looks like he should be something. And it just seems like every single year he's not. And there's kind of a trend wherever Dwight Howard goes that doesn't his coach kind of seem like they get fired soon after? I don't know. The NFL has suspended Oakland Raiders linebacker Aldon Smith 1 year without pay under the NFL's substance abuse policy that was announced on Tuesday. Back in September, Smith pleaded not guilty to misdemeanor counts of a hit and run, drunken driving, and vandalism. Vandalism. Really? I guess you're a Raider. Here's the thing for Aldon Smith. And I'm not going to feel too bad for Aldon Smith. Aldon Smith was playing pretty good football this year. Had 28 tackles, had 3.5 sacks for the Raiders. The Raiders are going to miss some of the production that he was giving them. Here's the thing, though, with Aldon Smith. You probably would have been a little bit better off, I don't know, hitting a female or deflating footballs or something like that. You probably would have got less of a suspension. As it stands now, he is out for a full calendar year. You might have saw that Boston Red Sox designated hitter David Ortiz is going to retire after the 2016 season. Ortiz has had a phenomenal... Wait a second. Retire? He's a designated hitter. What is David Ortiz retiring from? It's not like you're playing every day. You go out and swing the bat like two or three times. I could go do that in my yard right now. I guess. If you're just tired of... just kind of getting sick of the grind. Kind of tired of going out there and swinging the bat three times a night. Well, you know, we all have our crosses to bear. You might have saw last night, number 2 Kentucky beat number 5 Duke in college hoops, 74-63. And number 13 Michigan State beat number 4 Kansas. You know, you might not have noticed, because we don't really pay attention to college basketball until it's March Madness. Like, we don't even watch it. You know, maybe when it starts getting close to like Christmas time and you have a few days off work, we'll watch some of those holiday tournaments and stuff like that. But we don't really pay much attention to college hoops until it really gets to be March Madness. If you haven't noticed, though, there have been a ton of upsets already this year. A lot of schools that we're not expecting, and I'm talking really, really small schools, knocking off some big dogs in the world of college basketball. We haven't really gotten to college basketball just yet. I'm thinking maybe next week, and I'm not going to do a full show on college hoops, because like I said, we don't care until it gets to March Madness. But I don't know, we might have to kind of touch on college hoops. Give you at least an introduction, kind of some teams to keep in mind, maybe a few storylines to keep in mind, just to have my Daily Dose audience kind of prepared and educated for the season, so that you are ready as we get, you know, further along into the season, kind of know at least what you're looking at. Right now, I tell you, Kentucky beat Duke. You go, I guess. Duke lost everybody last year, right? I don't know. Michigan State beat Kansas. Yeah, Michigan State's always tough. I don't know. But we might have to get everybody kind of up to date and talk a little college hoops next week on the show. Let's jump right in. Because we've got a lot of things to get to, and I do want to get to Dylan and talk to him a little bit. College football, the latest college football playoff poll was released on Tuesday night. You know, the top 4 stayed the same. Number 1, Clemson. Number 2, Alabama. Number 3, Ohio State. And number 4, Notre Dame. But we're starting to see a little bit of change, starting to see some things moving around after that. Because after that, you've got number 5, Iowa. Now, Iowa, we didn't talk about it much last week, but Iowa has kind of crept into this top 10 situation with the playoffs and everything. And it's kind of been a little bit quiet because this group of people that is putting together this poll, this committee that they've assembled, it's a thankless job. I feel for the people that are trying to put together this poll every single week. But some of the things they do are kind of arbitrary. Like, they sit there and they say, well, we're not going to move, you know, Baylor up. We're not going to move some of these teams up because you haven't played anybody. Iowa hasn't really played anybody. I mean, they played number 19 Wisconsin. They played number 20 Northwestern. Well, it's the eye test. Well, it's the eye test when you feel like making it be the eye test. But Iowa hasn't really played anybody. They do still have Purdue, and they go to Nebraska left on their schedule. But Iowa has kind of crept in there. We haven't really talked about them much. Iowa's sitting at 5. But one of the things that we've started to see is the Big 12 started to move up a little bit this week. Oklahoma State's up to 6. Oklahoma's up to 7. Florida is sitting at 8. Michigan State at 9. And Baylor dropped to 10. Let's talk about a couple of the winners and losers this past week. Because we did have some winners, we did have some losers, and they might not be exactly who you might think right off the bat. Let me give my first winner. I'm going to give it to the Oklahoma Sooners. Yes, they lost to Texas earlier this season. But, you know, in sports, we have short memories. And remember, in college football especially, you are better off losing early than losing late. It is always going to be, what have you done for me lately? Well, lately, Oklahoma went to Waco and thumped previously unbeaten Baylor 34-24. I told you last week, someone from the Big 12 needs to run the table in November. Well, things are kind of lining up nice for the Sooners right now, because we had kind of stopped talking to them after they lost to Texas. Now they host TCU. And TCU is a little bit banged up. That's going to be this Saturday. Trevon Boykin, their quarterback, is out. Josh Doctson, their wide receiver, is out. Or at least those two guys are questionable. They're at least injured and not quite sure what they're going to bring to the table on Saturday. If they can beat TCU, they will play Oklahoma State. And Oklahoma's going to have a chance to get into the final playoff. And Baker Mayfield, who we kind of talked about, yeah, he's kind of flashy. He kind of has some things going for him. Baker Mayfield is now actually getting some talk for the Heisman Trophy. My, how things have changed in Oklahoma. And Bob Stoops is being called Big Game Bob again after beating Baylor, as opposed to poops his pants in the Big Game Bob, which is nice, really, for Bob Stoops. Because he had kind of a run there where they weren't winning any of those big games. Oklahoma had a very, very good week. Let's take a look at the loser. The loser I'm going to put on this list is going to be Notre Dame. What? Notre Dame blew out 3-7 Wake Forest 28-7 on Saturday. How exactly is Notre Dame a loser? Remember at the beginning of the season when we all looked at this this Irish schedule and we were looking at it, we were going, man, that schedule is loaded. If they somehow get through this schedule and they slip through and they actually only lose maybe one, they're going to be well deserving of being in that playoff. Now that we look at it, it looks a little different. Here's Notre Dame's schedule. Texas. Virginia. Georgia Tech. UMass. Clemson, who they lost to. Navy, who is you know, been very, very solid this year, but they're still a service academy. Southern Cal, who cares. Temple, I guess. Temple is one of the better wins on this. We talked about that last week. Temple is a good win for the Irish. Pitt. Wake Forest, Boston College, and their trump card that they were keeping in their back pocket, Stanford. It doesn't look so good now, does it? It's not completely their fault, but they just haven't beaten very good teams. And now what they were really, really hoping for was to knock off a top 10 Stanford team in that last week. But on Saturday, Stanford got beat by Oregon. Now Stanford has two losses, and beating them is not going to carry nearly as much weight as it would have. And don't forget, Notre Dame doesn't have a conference championship game to play in. Notre Dame could run the table, and Notre Dame could get left out. Because some of our other winners are creeping up on them. Here's another winner, the Big 12 Conference. We just talked about it a little bit. It wasn't just Oklahoma that won this week. Oklahoma State is up to 6. And like I said, Oklahoma is up to 7. If one of these two teams runs the table, they're going to play their way into the playoff game most likely. Problem for these two teams. The problem for Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, and they are going to face each other. So someone's going to get out of that. The problem is that Baylor and TCU no longer have to worry about that whole unbeaten schedule thing. The pressure is off of them. Oklahoma goes hosts TCU, and then they go to Oklahoma State in the final week. Okie State hosts Baylor, and then they will host Oklahoma that final week. I would say that the Cowboys actually probably have a little bit more of a favorable schedule as they get to play Oklahoma at home. One of those teams has got to skate through and get through without a loss. Otherwise, the Big 12, it might kind of come down to either the Big 12 gets in or Notre Dame gets in. Might be one of the two. My last loser of the week has to be the Pac-12. The Pac-12 is kind of cannibalizing itself. After Stanford losing, and take a look at some of these other scores that took place in college football this week. Unranked Oregon beat number 7 Stanford 38-36. Unranked Arizona beat number 10 Utah 37-30. Unranked Washington State beat number 19 UCLA 31-27. Do you see kind of the trend that's going on in the Pac-12 right now? The Pac-12 has a chance, a pretty good chance right now. They're going to get left out. We already know one of the Big 5 conferences is going to get left out. Right now, it looks like it could be Stanford. Real, real easy. Because now, your best hope for the Pac-12, you need two-loss Stanford to somehow sneak in. And that's not as easy as it looks. Stanford needs Utah to win the South desperately so that they can beat a ranked Utah team and get a little more strength of schedule, hopefully bumping them up. They need Oregon to keep winning. You know, every year we kind of hear about the Pac-12 saying, hey, you know what, we're as good as the SEC. Top to bottom, we're as good as the SEC. We've got talent all throughout this entire conference, and I'll hear some of that. I'm not opposed to that. I would agree with you. I think the Pac-12 is right there just behind the SEC. But here's kind of the thing. Be careful what you wish for, because these are the kind of things that happen late in the season. You start eating yourself and knocking yourself off within your own conference. You want to be considered the big dog. Yeah, you've got all these teams all throughout your conference that are capable of beating your team and spoiling the end of your season. Going to be an interesting, still, don't get too worked up, don't get too excited about college football, that poll just yet. We've got a lot of football still to be played. It's getting less and less all the time. We've still got conference games. We've still got some really, really big games. Going to be some fun stuff coming in college football. Don't get too excited just yet, but we're getting down to it. It's getting to be a very, very fun time of year. As promised, joining us right now on the Daily Dose Hotline, we are happy to have sports columnist Dylan Brooks. You know, Dylan writes for an NFL website called cover32.com. You can check out his work there every single week. Dylan also hosts his own blog, his own sports blog that you can check out at dylanbrookssports.wordpress.com. Dylan, thank you so much for joining us here on the Daily Dose. I really do appreciate it. How are things going here?
Things are going great. Thanks for having me on, Clint. I really appreciate it.
You know, I read Dylan's work every single week. And he writes good stuff. He writes intelligent stuff. You know, here on the Daily Dose, we try to apply a little common sense to the sports world. I know that's a little bit foreign to some people, but that is one of the reasons why I wanted to have him on, is because he does such a good job. Dylan, I want to talk a little NFL. I want to talk a little NBA. Get your thoughts on a few things. Let's start right here in Denver. It was revealed on Monday that Peyton Manning has a partial tear in his plantar fascia of his right foot, which, of course, is his back foot, is his push-off foot. You know, we look at Peyton Manning and we look at where he was, you know, just 2 years ago, where he had the huge, crazy season. But if I understand this correctly, Peyton has a bad foot. He has the rib injury. He has some sort of shoulder injury. We're not quite sure what's going on there. He has no feeling in his fingers. Dylan, is Peyton Manning done?
You know what? I'm surprised he's not out there in a wheelchair, to be honest with you.
Right.
I wouldn't say he's done. I mean, this is one of the hardest working guys. I mean, there's a lot of debate who's the best quarterback in NFL history. I wouldn't put him as the best quarterback in NFL history. I do have three of his jerseys on my wall right now, so that's tough for me to say. But I will say this. His work ethic sets him above the rest. When we look back, Peyton Manning changed the position as a whole. He made it not a physical position, but a smarts position, which is why he's valuable. He could be literally... back to my comment when I said he can be in a wheelchair, he is more valuable on the field at 25% than he is half the quarterbacks in the league at 100%, because teams have to respect his mind, his audibles, his count at the line.
Sure.
I mean, yeah, he might not be able to make the throw. Yeah, he's throwing like freaking, you know, three picks a game, but he can put his team in the best play possible, and that's what's so important to the team.
Agree with you 100%. His mind is what separates him. And it's not like Peyton has ever been this great physical specimen. He's just so smart. He knows exactly where the ball should go. And he has been able to get it there. He's extremely accurate, even though he's thrown ducks pretty much his whole career. Now, right now, Gary Kubiak is still saying that Peyton is still going to be the starter if he is healthy. He is not healthy. And Brock Osweiler is going to be starting this week so Peyton can get some rest. Let me ask you this. Because I guess here's what I'm thinking. I almost don't know what the worst case scenario is. Is it that Brock comes in and looks great, and then we sit there and say, oh, well, it was just Peyton was horrible? Or does Brock come in and struggle a little bit too? I don't know which is worse for this coaching staff and which is worse for this team, actually.
You nailed it right on the head. I mean, if Brock comes in and actually plays a solid game, let's say he doesn't throw an interception, which would be the first time a Bronco quarterback this season has thrown an interception.
Right.
And you're going to have the people that don't really know that much about football, people that are kind of angry at Peyton Manning, that just see his stats and just like, well, we should have Brock playing. Brock should have been starting the whole time. Look at him. He's young. He's not making interceptions. But that's not, I mean, if he does that one game, I mean, it's the Bears, first of all. Let's put that into perspective. They haven't been playing well all year. But I think the worst-case scenario, Clint, is if Brock Osweiler comes in and plays a lights-out game.
I agree with you.
And have everybody trying to say, we got to start him over Peyton, which is just not the answer.
Well, and the other side of it, too, because I agree with you. What if Brock does struggle, and we sit there, and he does come out. Let's say he throws two interceptions. Let's say he isn't able to get this offense moving either. Then we sit there and say, okay, maybe it wasn't all Peyton. But the bad news is we still have a horrible offense, and now we have a fundamentally flawed offense, and I don't know what we do with that. I guess that goes back on John Elway at that point.
Yeah, I think this week is going to be not really focused on Brock Osweiler. It's going to be focused on Gary Kubiak. He yep. needs to call safe plays for his, like his quarterback is going to get his first career start. You cannot be having him in plays where the reads are so complex where he can't really decide and gets caught holding the ball and gets a sack strip or something. They got to be one reads, get the play action game going. You got a mobile quarterback and Brock Osweiler. We're going to see a lot of boot actions. We saw his mobility last week. I think what we're going to see is we're going to see actually what Gary Kubiak can bring to the table as far as his new offense that he brings. And I honestly do believe our run game is going to kick it in gear, because when you have a mobile quarterback in the West Coast offense, the team has to respect that bootleg, which is going to open things up for the running game, and then one cut and go, which Gary Kubiak, we've seen in with the Ravens and Justin Forsett, he can excel.
Well, I agree with you, and I think it's going to be very interesting to watch that, because we've seen Peyton try to run a little bit of that bootleg stuff, and let's be clear, Peyton runs like a pregnant deer. That's all right. I understand that, but it's going to have a different look with Brock Osweiler, and he is going to be able to get on the edge. Let me ask you this. What do you expect from the Denver Broncos and Brock Osweiler this week going into Chicago?
To be honest, I don't expect much.
Okay, you're being realistic. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, as a hardcore Bronco fan, I understand, and especially the last 3 years of Peyton Manning, and we had the best record in the NFL the last 3 years, whether we've been tied for first or had first to ourselves. And the thing is, it doesn't matter in regular season. It really doesn't. And we have the weakest division, one of the weakest divisions. I think we could almost even lose the next, like, five of our next games and still win our division. The only team we have to worry about is the Kansas City Chiefs. We're split right now in the division 1-1.
Right.
They play the next four division games throughout the season, so they can kind of determine their fate. We're 7-2. Chiefs are 4-5. I don't see Derek Carr playing in the playoff game anytime soon. So I personally don't even think the coaching staff should have too much stress on their backs in this game. It doesn't really matter if we win or lose just because of the 7-0 start that we did have.
Sure.
We just want to see growth from Brock Osweiler. He's had 4 years behind Peyton Manning. This is a contract year. He's going to be a free agent after. I just want to see what he's learned and how he is going to take what he's learned behind one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history and translate that into the field.
I agree with you, and it's interesting because you have Brock Osweiler, who came out. He was pretty unheralded coming out of Arizona. Arizona State, really. Here's a guy, though, who over the last few years has been sitting and learning under Peyton Manning and to a certain degree John Elway. Let's hope that he's learned something. Let's shift away from the Broncos real quickly. Speaking of injuries, the New England Patriots somehow came back late to beat the Giants this past weekend on the road with a 54-yard field goal. But hey, they lost another player. They lost yet another player. Wide receiver Julian Edelman now has a broken bone in his foot. They're saying possibly he could come back for the playoffs. We'll see how that goes. It looks like a kind of a similar injury to what Dez Bryant just came back from. They're already lost running back Deion Lewis. They already have lost some offensive line help, Sebastian Vollmer and some guys like that. Are any of these players going to eventually affect what the Patriots are doing, or are they just going to keep up this pace for the rest of the year and roll right through everybody?
The answer is absolutely not. Obviously, Julian Edelman is one of the surprisingly uncoverable players. I mean, you had Julian, you had Gronk. Those are two of the best players right now on offense. So uncoverable. They take a specific body type of a player on defense to match up, and if you don't have it, you're just flat out, you're screwed. But the Patriots, they're a system. They're a machine. The comparison between Manning and Tom Brady comes into effect right here. When you play the Broncos with Peyton Manning, you're playing Peyton Manning. If Peyton Manning's off, the Broncos are off. That's it. Game over. When you play the Patriots and you play Bill Belichick, you're playing the Patriots as a whole. You're playing that offensive unit as a whole. They will keep chugging. They will keep plugging. They'll be just fine. You saw Deion Lewis go out. What happened 3 plays later? Brandon Bolden on a wheel route catches a touchdown. They have depth, and it's the next man up mentality. Bill Belichick has his guys' minds right, and I just going to be next man up. You're going to see Amendola making the same plays Julian Edelman make. You're going to see Brandon Bolden and Gronkowski picking up that slack. LaFell's going to start getting incorporated in the offense a little bit more. I think they're going to be just fine.
Yeah, I unfortunately agree with you. And I don't think, because of, you know, the Spygate stuff, and I understand that, and hey, did the Patriots cheat? Of course they do. But I don't know if anyone, I don't know if there is a coach, maybe all time, that puts his players in a position to be successful as well as Bill Belichick. He doesn't have a running back? Fine. He uses his tight ends. He doesn't have good tight ends? Fine. He has quick little wide receivers that are so pinpoint in their routes that he finds ways to get people open. And on a game day, it seems like Bill Belichick every week just out-coaches the other side again and again and again. Now this week, they are Monday night against Buffalo. I like what Buffalo is doing the last maybe week or so, maybe 2 weeks. Any chance Buffalo can give the Patriots a test on Monday night?
You know, that's a game. You got Rex Ryan, so he's obviously going to make headlines with some comment that he's going to make in the press conference.
Sure.
But, I mean, they match up decently. You saw the Bills' defense do very good against what I thought was a very good Jets offense. I mean, you got Chris Ivory, Eric Decker, who's been consistent all year, Brandon Marshall, and they pretty much had their way with them, to be honest.
Yeah, they did.
But we're talking about the Patriots. They're 9-0. I don't see them losing against the Bills. They're just too solid of a team, and one of Bill Belichick's famous quotes that I love is, there's no shortcut to being mentally tough, and this team's going to be mentally tough against the Bills. I think they come out with a win.
Well, and you know what it seems like always happens with the Bills, and maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like it always happens when they're facing the Patriots. The Bills play them really close. They lead late, and somehow right at the end, the Patriots will steal it from them, and the Bills fans will be devastated once again, because that's just how things go. That's just how it goes. Hey, we saw on Monday night the Cincinnati Bengals go all Bengals on us and lose at home to the Houston Texans. That actually, well, that's part of the story, but that's not the entire story. After the game, Texans defensive end J.J. Watt went gangster on us and dropped some big-time smack on quarterback Andy Dalton, saying our goal is to come out here and make the Red Rifle look like the Red Ryder BB gun. Oh, snap. J.J. Watt just went Christmas story smack on us. Really? Is this really what NFL smack talk has come to? We're talking...
I don't know. How are these moms going to explain to their kids
exactly
how this model is being out there?
Exactly. What's next? He's going to like drop some "you're a mean one, Mr. Grinch" on us? Oh, NFL guys are brutal. Dylan, the Bengals are absolutely loaded with talent. They have talent on both sides of the football. Andy Dalton has a ton of weapons. How are they losing to the Houston Texans? Is this the same old Bengals team that we kind of just were getting past thinking it was?
You know, you've seen Deion Sanders bring it up all the time. When all the hype was going on with the Bengals, Deion Sanders has been speaking to his gun, saying, you know, we'll see when the playoffs come. Have they proven anything? Again, no, it's the regular season. They have so much talent. They're definitely proving that they're worthy of that first playoff win under Andy Dalton. I just don't know about this team. I mean, the reason they lost or had lack of offense, Tyler Eifert dropped, I don't know, maybe 1,000 passes that were right to him. That didn't help. But, yeah, this team is I can't put my finger on. You got A.J. Green, who's one of the premier receivers in the league. They got a nice 1-2 punch in the backfield with Hill and Giovanni Bernard. But it just comes down, can Andy Dalton not cut his hair for 1 week,
right,
and play with people all eyes on him? I don't know, and we're not going to be able to know until he proves it in a playoff game.
And I still always come back to this, and I hate to come back to this because it just sounds mean-spirited, but can you in any type of universe see a Super Bowl in which Andy Dalton and Marvin Lewis are pulling up the Lombardi Trophy?
I mentioned it the other day to my buddies. I was like, how long has Marvin Lewis been coach of the Bengals since Chad Johnson? I mean, this guy seems like he's just been there for like 30 years.
Right.
And I can't see him doing it. He had Carson Palmer and TJ Uchimanzada and Chad Ochocinco, and you think, you know, with the ex-Heisman Trophy and Carson Palmer, they were going to get it done when they had amazing years in Cincy, and somehow, some way, they found a way to choke in the playoffs. And I don't think I could see Andy Dalton hoisting the Lombardi Trophy. There's just no way, especially with the Patriots, the Broncos. There's a lot of good teams in the AFC. I mean, they still have Pittsburgh, who could easily dethrone them in their division. So, I don't see it.
Pittsburgh is one of those teams that I honestly think, and I don't know that they have flaws. They have a ton of flaws. But Pittsburgh is one of those teams that I really think a lot of teams in the AFC are going, please don't get into the playoffs. I don't want to see you. They have so many... they're just kind of goofy good, and they have so many skilled position players. You saw Antonio Brown. Dude can take over a game from the wide receiver position. The Steelers are a team that I don't think anybody really wants to see in the playoffs.
I'll tell you right now, I don't want to see them.
I don't either.
I mean, you think, oh, they lost Le'Veon Bell. D'Angelo Williams doesn't skip a beat. Looks just like Le'Veon Bell out there. As soon as Big Ben's back in the game, Antonio Brown is just a completely different receiver. I mean, oh my goodness, the guy disappears when Big Ben's on the field, and as soon as he's on the field, this guy is back to the superstar level. Yeah, this team is, it's just weird. I mean, the Steelers, they keep their mantra, you know, they win tough games, hurt, they'll play. And you just don't want a team, especially with Big Ben, who has two Super Bowl rings under his belt,
right,
come in there with that experience, that confidence, and that, like, tough-headedness. That's a scary team.
It really, really is. Hey, over on the NFC side, I'm going to be honest, Dylan, I can't figure out who the team to beat even is. With what we have seen take place over the last, just few weeks, if you had to pick a Super Bowl favorite out of the NFC, who would you take right now?
This has been changing for me all season.
Me too. I know.
Beginning of the season, it was a no-brainer Packers. Well, guess what? They've lost three in a row. I didn't think I could say it, and you asked me the Andy Dalton question. Could I see Andy Dalton hoisting Lombardi Trophy? You know who I could see? And this is a shock. I could see Cam Newton holding that trophy at the end of this year. I really could.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. No, Cam Newton, and speaking of teams, we kind of talked about just now with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Speaking of teams that kind of just grit out, and they're just kind of that gritty, it seems like it's always third and four, but somehow Cam Newton pulls it out. Carolina Panthers are just a team that they just kind of get it done. It's never pretty. It's never anything that you're like, oh, no, you got to record. You got to watch this team. No, but they just seem like they continue to get it done. One team that we know is not the best team in the NFC is the Dallas Cowboys. Dallas Cowboys have lost 7 games in a row since losing quarterback Tony Romo to a collarbone injury in week 2. This week, it has been announced Tony Romo is going to play on Sunday against Miami. Cowboys are 2-7. Bizarrely, in that horrible division, they're only 3 games back. Let me ask you this, Dylan. Would you bring Tony Romo back?
You know, if I'm Jerry Jones and I just paid Tony Romo a godly amount of money, I mean, I've broken a collarbone before, and that is not something you want to be doing physical activities with, let alone in pads, getting sacked, and having 200-pound linemen land on you.
Sure.
I mean, I could see that refracturing again if he gets a bad hit. I mean, at this point, you know, the Giants are 5-5 at the head of that division. I mean, it makes sense to bring him back mathematically. Are the Giants going to lose that division? I don't see it at all. You just saw Bradford go down for the Eagles. The guy can't stay healthy. The Redskins, not a chance. I think the Giants are going to walk away with this, not with a pretty record. The Cowboys are 2-0 with Tony Romo. They also haven't won a game with Greg Hardy. So we'll see what they do. I know Dez will be happy. That's probably why Jerry Jones did it, because Dez is in his ear yelling at him, get my quarterback on the field. But from a business standpoint, no, but you have to please the fans as the quote-unquote America's team.
Right.
If he says he can go to the media, you kind of have to let him go, because then you're just going to have a riot in Dallas.
No, you're probably right, because I look at the situation the same way, and I sit there and say, I'd leave him out. I'd be going for that first-round pick, which they probably can get. Romo is a little bit older. You could save him if for next year. That kind of, you know, the weird thing to me, though, all going into this season, and with last year what we saw with DeMarco Murray, all we kept hearing was how good this offensive line was for Dallas. It doesn't look that way. They can't run the ball. They can't protect their quarterback. Of course, right now they have Matt Castle back there who doesn't have an arm whatsoever. But it's just such a weird situation where no one expected the Cowboys to be here. We all thought they might even be a contender for the Super Bowl. I know they've had a ton of injuries, but I can't believe that offensive line is so bad.
I mean, you think you'd win one game out of 7.
Right.
Regardless of who's at quarterback. I mean, if you're talking offensive line this, offensive line that, I mean, that's how you win games. I mean, clearly isn't as good as most people thought, and it doesn't help when you have Brandon Weeden and Matt Castle playing quarterback for you.
Right. The Cowboys cut Brandon Weeden earlier this week, which how it took him that long, I'll never know. Because remember, we were hearing Jerry Jones talk about Brandon Weeden was our guy. Hilarious stuff coming out of Jerry Jones, as usual. Here's a question for you. I don't know what kind of horrible voodoo was going on in that Denver Bronco-Green Bay Packer game, but whatever it was, each team got some really bad juju out of it. What in the world is wrong with the Green Bay Packers?
I think that game against the Broncos really had a hit on Aaron Rodgers' confidence. He had the worst passing total he's ever had, 77 yards, I think it was, which is insane when you're talking about Aaron Rodgers, who was an MVP candidate who hadn't thrown a pick at home for, like, some ridiculous amount of games. It's, you know, Jordy Nelson out, it's tough because Jordy Nelson, people don't even give him credit. Jordy Nelson's one of the best receivers in the league, top 5 if you ask me. That definitely hurts Aaron Rodgers, and he doesn't really have a go-to guy on offense. I mean, Randall Cobb, he's a utility player out of the slot that is quick. James Jones, is a possession receiver who can make tough catches, but is it really going to make the yards after the catch like Jordy Nelson made? I don't know what happened to Eddie Lacy. I mean, what happened to him? I would love an answer. I have no idea what happened to him, if that doesn't help. So you're looking at a team that's really resting everything on Aaron Rodgers, and you're kind of seeing that, you know, this guy was a superhuman. Well, guess what? You're going to have bad teams in the NFL. You're not going to be amazing every single game. And I think we're starting to see that Aaron Rodgers is starting to show his human colors.
Well, and just what you said, they don't seem to have the receivers that can beat you. And we saw here in Denver, when Denver played them, Denver was very, very content to leave Aaron Rodgers in the pocket. They didn't have to pressure him. If they got the pressure, that was fine. But they were more interested in containing him because they knew his wide receivers could not get open downfield. And then apparently Eddie Lacy ate all of the cheese that was up in Green Bay because he looks like he's about 400 pounds to me.
Yeah. Eddie Lacy, I don't even know what happened to him. James Starks is playing well, though, but... Yeah, you saw Denver literally put a blanket on all those receivers. I was at the game, and Aaron Rodgers looked to be in the pocket for over 7 seconds, like half the time, and he couldn't find anybody. I mean, to his credit, he could not find an open wide receiver.
The Packers are in some trouble, and you know, bizarrely, the Minnesota Vikings are kind of getting it going. They go out to Oakland this past week, beat a Raider team that was at least, you know, showing a few flashes of maybe being interesting. The Vikings have a good young quarterback. They have a stud running back with Adrian Peterson. They have some good wide receivers. They have a solid defense. Minnesota Vikings are one of those teams over in the NFC that could give some teams some big time problems. Like we spoke about the Steelers, you might not want to see them in the playoffs. I don't know if you want to see the Vikings in the playoffs if you're in the NFC. Of course, the NFC is bad anyways, but...
Yeah, I wouldn't sleep on the Vikings. I don't know if you remember the preseason. Teddy Bridgewater was the best quarterback in the preseason. Four straight games, only one incompletion every single game. The guy was playing lights out. And you're right, with Adrian Peterson in the backfield, that team can do anything, especially in the playoffs when it's a physical game. Adrian Peterson's going to set the tone. He's going to set the tone early. At the beginning of the season, I called the Vikings making the playoffs as a wild card.
Sure.
I cannot actually believe that they're in first place. Good for them, but I think what's really sparked this offense is the arrival of Stephon Diggs. This guy is a rookie, came out of nowhere, made his debut against the Broncos, which was their number one defense, and he balled. And he's continuing to ball. It helps when your first game is against the number one defense in the league and you're going up against two of the best cornerbacks and you have a game like that. It's a boost to your confidence, and he's taken that through the rest of the game since.
Well, and I was really impressed when Minnesota came to town here to Denver with both Diggs and with Bridgewater. Bridgewater's a tough kid. I don't know if he gets enough credit. He got knocked around all day that game. He doesn't care. He'll stand in there and he'll take the punishment. And Diggs, for his age, runs really, really good routes. He gets open and he runs precise routes. And it seemed like Bridgewater knows where he's going to be. I like Minnesota over on the NFC side. Seattle? Sitting at 4-5 now. No, it's not completely over, but, Dylan, are the Seahawks done?
No. We will see the Seahawks in the playoffs. The only teams that are really fighting for that wild card are the Falcons, who we've seen at the beginning of the year, we thought they were unstoppable with Julio Jones. Now we're seeing Matt Ryan kind of flake out a little bit, and then it's going to be the Packers. I see the Packers and Vikings switching in that NFC North.
Sure.
And the Seahawks are going to be a 5 or 6 seed. They could maybe even win that division just because the Cardinals, and you never know, Carson Palmer could get injured tomorrow.
Easy.
And they're just afterthought. The Seahawks, been in the Super Bowl twice. You can't count them out. That defense makes plays. Russell Wilson extends plays. You can't count them out, and not until the fat lady sings.
Yeah, and you know, the offensive line has so many issues. I actually give Russell Wilson maybe even a little more credit this year with the job that he's done, because he's not getting any help. The one thing that I wish Seattle knew how to do, and I've given Pete Carroll a lot of grief for some of his, they cannot figure out how to use Jimmy Graham to save their life. They don't know what to do with him. I know they went and traded for him. They trade Unger for him. They bring him over. They have no idea how to use him, though, and it's kind of bizarre to see.
It is so shocking to see that big of a player who's shown how good he is in the receiving game not get used. It's almost like Calvin Johnson with the Lions.
Right.
I'm an offensive coordinator. I don't care, especially with how bad these offenses have struggled. Every offensive possession, you got 3 downs basically before you got to punt it. One of those plays has to go to your biggest pass-catching weapon, especially if you're going to pay that money, you're going to give up Max Hunter to the center. It just makes no sense, especially since the Seahawks are such a ground-and-pound team in Marshawn Lynch. I mean, the stats are even insane with Jimmy Graham on the field. When he's on the field, the team gets only like 1.7 yards a rush.
It's so
And then when
bizarre.
He's off the field, they bump that up to twice as much. It's just like the guy doesn't block, and then you're not going to throw him the ball, so what is he doing? What is his position out there? The guy that doesn't block or catch footballs but gets paid a bunch of money. The Seahawks offensive coordinator has got to figure it out.
Right, exactly. Excellent point there. Hey, while we have Dylan on the line, and I know we're talking some NFL, I want to switch over to the NBA because Dylan, like I said, he writes for Cover32.com, does some great work on the NFL side, but he also writes about the NBA a little bit, does a lot of work, and I know, like I've said before, we're a national show here at the Daily Dose, but we do have a Colorado flavor. I've got to talk a little bit about the hometown Denver Nuggets. They've started off a little bit better, I guess, than anyone thought they would. They've actually won a few games, which was more than I thought they would. Dylan, is there any hope for this team at all this year?
This is a tough division. I'll give them that. It's a very, very competitive division. I think the Utah Jazz are a lot better. We have Oklahoma City. So you got Russell Westbrook dropping triple doubles every week with Kevin Durant. The Timberwolves have maybe one of the most insane starting lines I've ever seen.
Yep.
In professional sports, you got Rubio, you got Zach LaVine, the Duck champion. You have two number one picks from the last 2 years of the draft. I mean, not to mention, you know, you got Kevin Garnett, the truth out there. But the Nuggets are young, and people need to understand that. Moutier is 19 years old. Gary Harris, our best defensive player, is 21 years old. Nikola Jokic is 20 years old, our center, who I think is going to be great. Will Barton, who had his career night a couple weeks ago, is 24. Our best player right now is Danilo Gallinari, and he's 27. People need to understand how young we are. And for how young we are and having never played with each other, especially under new coaching staff, I think 5-5 is incredible. Last time this year we were 2-7, so way better than what a lot of people expected. Coming up a three-game home streak, this is going to be an interesting team to watch. Now, basketball is a little different than NFL. One player can take it over. You got the Warriors, who are currently undefeated in the Western Conference. So right now, the Nuggets are in the eighth seed. They technically would be in playoffs at the playoffs end of the day, which is pretty incredible for how young this team is.
Well, and I'm glad you said that because I need somebody to bring me back and help me be positive about the Nuggets franchise. I do like how hard they're playing under Mike Malone. I do like the attention to turnovers, the attention to rebounding, the attention to defense that he has brought with him. I know he is good typically with young players, so it seems like they're better than I thought they were going to be. Thank you for making me feel a little bit better about my hometown team. Speaking of the Golden State Warriors, they are playing at an insane level. Like you said, they're undefeated. I love what they're doing. Here's my concern for Golden State. It's only November. Dylan, can they keep up this pace that they are on?
I mean, can they keep up the pace? Probably not, because this pace would be a perfect 82-0 season. But, wow, I mean, the Warriors can do no wrong. I mean, literally, I think it was last week, Steph Curry is dribbling the ball down the court, and at half court, he did get fouled and sold the foul, but they didn't call the foul. And he lobs up a half-court shot, and it goes in.
Right.
And gets the foul call. I mean, he can do no wrong. If Steph Curry's shooting a object that looks like a basketball at a net, it's going to go in. And you look at the depth on that team, it's insane. Now they have something extra to fight for with their coach, Steve Kerr, having his illness.
Sure.
So it brings more heartstrings to that team. And then you have, you know, the old Denver Nugget faithful, Andre Iguodala, who's an all-star sixth man. And when you have a player with that much experience taking that sixth man back row seat and letting everybody know, hey, yeah, I don't need to be the star, we're about a championship team. I mean, they've been together for so long. That team, I mean, they're fun to watch. I know the people at my work aren't going to like to hear that, but they're fun to watch. And whoever's going to beat them, they're going to have to throw a huge party afterwards, because that's going to be an insane upset.
Well, and some of the things that you talked about their unselfishness, you know, the things you hear, somehow Steph Curry has gotten better from last year. That tells me that he didn't just go over and celebrate, hey, we won it all. He got back in the gym and he's working harder than ever because he is somehow better. Just like you talked about with Iguodala, a guy that says, hey, it's not all about me. It's about this team. If I come off the bench and that helps us, I'm willing to do that. That to me is why Golden State is where they are at. On the other side of things, what in the world is wrong with the Houston Rockets? Houston is 4-7. I know they got Ty Lawson. Yes, you probably should check what's in his Gatorade bottle. But I'm a little bit concerned, not just the way they're playing. They've got funky, bad body language. They don't seem like they get along very well. What is wrong with the Houston Rockets?
I don't even know. I mean, you look at the team a year ago who had an MVP candidate in James Harden.
Sure.
A favorite to go deep in the playoffs. I mean, you know, they went 4-0 against the Nuggets last season. Now they're 0-2. So this team has taken a 360. Do I think they're going to come back? Absolutely. Just because Harden alone, I mean, we're talking about
a guy who's
a million free throws a game, and if he continues to call those fouls and make those free throws, the team's going to be competitive.
Right.
But I think it comes down to Dwight Howard. A lot of people give Dwight Howard a little bit too much credit just based on the stats alone. Yeah, he gets a lot of rebounds, but like we saw in the two games, all you have to do is foul Dwight Howard every time he's in, and he's not only is he not an offensive threat, but he's an offensive threat to his own team because he can't make a free throw.
Right.
And people think, you know, Dwight Howard is a shot-blocking master. You have to look at the shots, what he's doing when he blocks them. Just because you swap them out of bounds doesn't do anything. If the team still retains the possession, you got to look at a guy like Dirk Nowitzki, who a couple years ago had half as many swats, but when he swatted it, he would hold on to the ball or he would tip it to a teammate and change possession. This team is just not creating positions, and yeah, they're gonna figure it out. But right now, they look like a black hole.
Yeah, Houston's it's just been so ugly, and I'm so surprised because that's not exactly what I thought. Speaking of a little bit of Nuggets line, George Karl. When's George getting fired in Sacramento? And I really hope they don't, but I'm really, really getting worried when I hear the stuff coming out of Sacramento. It just feels like he's about to get fired.
Yeah, I hear it all the day from Nuggets fans. They're angry that we got rid of him. Well, like, guess what, guys? Not doing too hot in Sacramento. He's got a good lineup there, but he's not dealing with what the Nuggets have. He doesn't have a 19-year-old player who, you know, English is his second language as his number one player. I don't know what's going on down there, but it doesn't look pretty, and it doesn't look like he's going to be tenured in Sacramento for too long.
He's got some head cases in that locker room. He's got some, Rajon Rondo and Boogie Cousins right there alone would be enough to get any coach to quit. Here's a quick question. The Cavaliers clearly look like the class of the East. Maybe the Bulls, I don't know. There's not a whole lot over on the Eastern side. The worry that I have for the Cleveland Cavaliers, they have a history of injuries. All these players, Kevin Love's, the Kyrie Irving's, all these guys that they are depending on, they all got pay raises. They all have injury history. And LeBron James has a ton of miles on him. Can the Cavaliers stay healthy? Because I think if they can, they're going to represent the East again. Can they stay healthy, though?
That's the question. That's the question. I mean, they probably could have had a finals win if they're healthy. I mean, they started 2-1 against the Warriors, but you don't have Kyrie, you don't have Kevin Love, and you're depending on J.R. Smith. I mean, this team is mediocre, and LeBron James is literally playing the entire game both ways all day, every day, and it's going to be one of those things where he's going to have to take his Superman cape off soon here, or he's going to get injured, because if he goes down, then this team's in a world of hurt.
Oh, they're horrible if he goes down.
Yeah, and the East is a competitive division or competitive conference right now. I mean, the Atlanta Hawks are solid. Heat are playing just fine. The Toronto Raptors are coming out of nowhere. The Bulls are the Bulls. Jimmy Butler is just a great team. And this team with the Cavs, they need to stay healthy or they are going to be hurting.
One last question. Before we got to wrap this up, but one last question I got to ask you. Over on the Western side, Los Angeles Lakers, I have a number of listeners out in California. I have to ask the question. Did the Lakers make a mistake going and getting D'Angelo Russell with that draft pick? Kristaps Porzingis has looked much, much brighter. There are times late in the game that Byron Scott is not even putting Russell on the floor. The Lakers are horrible. Who cares? Play him. If he's the future, play him. Did they make a mistake going and getting Russell at that pick?
Yeah, I don't know. There's got to be something in the locker room, don't you think, between the coach and him? Like, you just mentioned it. The team is struggling, so why are you limiting minutes on a young player that needs to gain experience? What a better time for that player to gain experience than when Kobe's constantly getting hurt and sitting on the bench? And it just makes no sense. There has to be something that we aren't seeing or being told inside that team. And it's just so Laker-like as of late with their bad decisions and just Kobe not being the man that we've all come to know and love. And the Lakers are, they need to escape the bottom three, I'll tell you that much right now.
Yeah, they do. Hey, great, great stuff today. Dylan, I would like to thank you so much for stopping by. Feel free to stop by anytime. Again, if you would like to check out any of Dylan's work, you can see him every single week on cover32.com or head over to his own blog. Check out his website, dylanbrookssports.wordpress.com. He does some great, great stuff. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really do appreciate it.
Clint, thank you for having me. I enjoy talking sports with you any chance I can get.
As we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. You know, this week, UFC fighter Ronda Rousey got TKO'd by Holly Holm. You know, and there's a few things to take away from this fight. But, you know, in her last three fights, Rousey had KO'd her opponents in 34, 16, and 14 seconds. Now, we have a number of people, and I know that it's easy to pile on Rousey now. She got knocked out, and she was kind of a punk before the fight, wouldn't shake hands. I'm never going to condone that, or that's always kind of a punk move, in my opinion. But it's kind of funny, because I know that there's a lot of people out there that have never watched a single one of her fights that are kind of piling on her. And it's kind of funny that I've heard a number of people talking about how, well, you know, she just got too full of herself. And she just got, she was doing too many commercials, and she's doing a movie, and she's, maybe. Or maybe she got out-executed. We talked about last week. You need to be, you know, have better players, and then execution is what matters. It looked to me like in that fight, like she got out-executed. She went in there, it looked like she was going to try to prove that she was a boxer. She's not a boxer. She's probably better with the grappling side of things. And she stayed on the outside, and she got pounded for it. But, you know, this whole idea of people, well, she was doing too many commercials. She was doing too many. You know who does more commercials than anybody was Michael Jordan. You know who still does a ton of commercials? People like Tom Brady. The great people, if you get an opportunity and they say, hey, we'd like to give you some money, yeah, you're probably going to take it. But, you know, Ronda Rousey was a 22-1 favorite. Got knocked out by a kick to the neck in the second round. But it made me start thinking about some of the biggest upsets in sports history. And you know, the thing about that is that is why we love sports. If I go to a movie, I can go to the movies right now. I can go out to the theater right now, and I can walk into a movie, and I probably have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen. I can probably figure out the plot. I can probably figure out the big climatic finish. I'm probably going to have a pretty good idea of how it's going to end. I don't know the outcomes of sports. I have no idea. And you can sit there and say you do. Go prove it. Put that money up and let's go to Vegas and let's get ourselves a new house if you really do know the outcomes. We don't know. It is the ultimate reality show. We honestly don't know how it's going to end. Today, the Daily Dose top five upsets of all time. Number five, do you ever wonder why college basketball teams play those early season tournaments in like Hawaii or the Virgin Islands or overseas? Sometimes they'll go up to the Alaska Shootout, those kind of things. Here's something that some people may not know. You actually, if you're going to go offshore, if you're going to go outside of the continental U.S., you get some additional practice time. You actually get, and it fluctuates sometimes, but you usually get something like 10 extra practice dates to get to play outside of the continental U.S. That's why they go to Alaska. That's why they go to Hawaii. That's why they go do that. In 1982, the Virginia Cavaliers were loaded. Virginia was number one in the preseason polls. They had Ralph Sampson. They had Rick Carlisle. They had Doug Newberg. They had Ricky Stokes. This was a loaded team. and they went over to play in the Maui Invitational. At the time, the Maui Invitational would be three teams plus the host team that had their own gym, little bitty school, NAIA school called Chaminade, that hosted the tournament. So, hey, you can all come over and play in our gym, but we get to be in the tournament too. Well, in 1982, number one Virginia went over there, and they were going to play Chaminade in the first game, and everything was going to, you know, hey, we're going to see the number one team, except that little Chaminade somehow upset Virginia 77-72. An NAIA school beat the number one division school in the country. You can't sleep on these teams, especially I think it's always tougher in basketball too. Because these little schools, they're kind of sneaky. Chaminade beats Virginia, number five on our list of top five upsets. Number four, a lot of people are going to remember this one. February 10th, 1990, 37-0. Mike Tyson was such a big favorite over 29-4-1, James Buster Douglas, that many of the Vegas odds makers were not even giving a betting line. They weren't even issuing odds. They weren't even allowing you to bet on the fight. And those that did had Mike Tyson as a 42-41 favorite. It fluctuated from 42-45-1. If you laid $100, you got $4,200 back if you would have bet on Buster Douglas. Think about just this recent fight. I told you about Rousey. Ronda Rousey was a 22-1 favorite. Mike Tyson was double that. One problem with this fight, and I'll tell you right now, because a lot of people are probably going to be saying, how is that not higher? How do you have that at four? That should be like one or two. There's a couple reasons. The problem with this fight was Douglas was a big guy. And Douglas knew how to fight. Tyson was a little guy. Tyson was not a big heavyweight. He was 5'9", 5'10". He wasn't a big guy. Anytime you have fighters like that, big good beats little good more times than not. And the other problem with this, Buster Douglas was a guy who actually knew how to fight. And biggest key to this fight, Buster Douglas was not afraid of Mike Tyson. And you can see that. If you go back and watch this fight, they'll show this fight on Classic Fights or whatever. They'll show it on Classic ESPN or something. You go from the very, very early rounds, you can see Buster Douglas is not afraid of Tyson. That was not the case. So many of Tyson's fights were lost before the fight even started. You could see the guys were petrified of even getting in the ring with him. Douglas wasn't afraid. And Mike Tyson had kind of made his name beating up on tomato cans. He's a great, great puncher. He's a phenomenal puncher. He'd rip your head off if you stood there and let him just slug with you. But Mike Tyson was not a great fighter. And Buster Douglas knocked Tyson out in the 10th round. Mike Tyson was undefeated no more. Number four on our list, Tyson goes down to Buster Douglas. Number three on our list of biggest upsets ever. In 1990, speaking of college hoops, UNLV went 35-5 and rolled through the NCAA tournament. They were beating people in the tournament in 1990 by an average of nearly 20 points a game. In the finals, they faced Duke and crushed Duke by 30. And I watched that game. That game was here in Denver. That game was not even that close. That felt like a 50-point game. And then Larry Johnson, Stacey Ogman, Greg Anthony, Anderson Hunt, George Ackles, who else, came back and they rolled off 34 straight wins in 91. When they got to the tournament and UNLV was rolling, this was one of those teams that everyone was talking about as one of the greatest college basketball teams ever. They get to the tournament, they beat Montana by 30. They beat Georgetown, I think it was by 8. They beat Utah by 17. They beat Seton Hall by 12. And then they get to the Final Four, and they're going to face Duke again. Now, as a coach, you can tell your team, hey, you better respect this team. You better respect your opponent. Because I'm telling you, this team has had you in their sights all season. Since you beat them down in the previous championship game, Duke has been aiming all year to try to get to see you again. But UNLV, the kids were like, we know what they have. We know Bobby Hurley. We know Christian Laettner. We know what they have. They're not going to do anything different. In fact, the night before the game, Jerry Tarkanian did not like the way the UNLV kids were practicing. He actually pulled them aside and warned his players, Duke is going to beat you because you have not prepared the way that you should have for them. Tarkanian was right. Duke 79, UNLV 77, one of the biggest upsets. I know you look at that and you say, well, UNLV was like a one seed and Duke was a two seed. That game was not supposed to be close. UNLV was going to beat them by 30 again if Duke was lucky. That's all they would beat them by. That UNLV team was absolutely loaded. Number three on our list, UNLV gets beat by Duke. Number two on our list. Now, imagine this for a second because it's kind of hard for us to picture it these days. But imagine if, like, the Arena League joined the NFL. And then the champs from the Arena League were going to play the champs from our current-day NFL in the big championship game. That's sort of what happened in 1969. The AFL, the American Football League, was this new upstart league known for big offenses, known for going out there and just throwing it all over the field. It was a totally different thing, the conservative defense, 3 yards in a cloud of dust NFL. The old school NFL league had already won both Super Bowls. You know, the Packers had won two. And so when we had the Jets get to Super Bowl III, and they're going to face the NFL Colts, the Jets were this AFL team that nobody really respected. They're going to go in there. They're going to get crushed. It's not going to be even a game. In fact, the Baltimore Colts were favored by 20 in a Super Bowl. I mean, that number now is staggering. You would never see a Super Bowl favorite by that much. The Baltimore Colts were favored by 20. And to be honest, it wasn't a very pretty game. But Joe Namath found a way after he guaranteed, you know, that they were going to win. The Jets somehow knock off the Colts 16-7 in Super Bowl III. And a game that so many people just said, oh, the Colts are going to roll in that game, won't even be close. And the Jets, the interesting thing about this game, and it did kind of change the way the NFL went, because the Jets didn't come out and throw it all over the place. The Jets actually came out and beat them at their own game. They played them tough. They beat them with their defense. They beat them with their running game. And the Jets won a huge game that kind of changed the NFL. Super Bowl III is number two on our list of biggest upsets. Number one on our list. Now, it's one thing when professional teams beat professionals. We saw the Jets beat the Colts. That's one thing. It's one thing when college kids beat college kids. Duke beating UNLV or even Chaminade beating Virginia. That's one thing. You're both kind of the same thing. But in 1980, we actually saw college kids beat professionals. That doesn't happen. In the 1980 Winter Olympics, the Russians were using professional players. There's no, well, they sort of were. No, they were. The Russians were using professional players. The average age of that Russian hockey team was 27 years old. They were grown men. Team USA had college kids, and they were literally kids just out of college. The average age of that team for Team USA was 21 years old. They had just played in an exhibition back in September prior to this game. And Russia won 10-3. This wasn't close. This wasn't going to be close. There was no way Team USA was even going to hang with Russia. But, you know, their coach, Herb Brooks, had kind of changed the way that team played. They skated extremely fast. They had gotten so much better passing. They played extremely hard. And to be honest, they kind of got a little bit lucky. And when it got tight at the end, Team USA right at the end, I believe it was of the first period, gets kind of a lucky 30-foot goal that probably had no business getting in. Russia kind of panicked. Russia wasn't quite sure what to do. And you can see late in that game, if you go back and you rewatch the Miracle on Ice, you see Russia wasn't quite sure what to do. They had never been down. They didn't know what to do. They didn't pull their goalie. They had never been in that position, and they weren't quite sure of how to approach that and how to try to get the win. Team USA wins 4-3 in the Miracle on Ice in the 1980 Olympics for our number one upset of all time. That's the great thing about sports. We don't know how it's going to end. As much as we know and as much as we watch and as much as we try to figure these things out, that's the great thing about sports. We have no idea how it's going to end. It is the ultimate reality show. Hey, next week on the show, like I said, we'll give you just kind of a quick crash course in college basketball, talk a little bit about some of the teams you want to keep an eye on, talk a little bit about some of the storylines you want to keep an eye on. Got to touch on NFL. NCAA football is winding down and getting down close to it. We'll have another college football poll that we'll probably have to talk about. And, you know, we're going to start talking a little more NBA every single week. You know, next week is already Thanksgiving, and you know I'm going to have to talk about a few things that I am thankful for. Hey, you know, one thing I'd really be thankful for, if you went over to iTunes and you gave us a 5-star rating and a 5-star review, that would help us so much. Would like to thank you all for listening. Thank you to Dylan Brooks for stopping in. It was great to have you here. As usual, have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do this show without you. Hope you all have a great week. I will see you all next week, everybody.